It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Apparently, there has been a slight tapping noise on some of these podcasts. I've listened to it. It can be a little distracting. A couple people have complained. So I conducted an investigation and concluded that my desk chair, which I've spent thousands of hours in, had what a lot of chairs have, kind of squeaking. So I got out the special oil, and I think I've pretty much taken care of the problem. If it comes back, we'll go to extreme measures. No problem today because I'm in the studio. And the sound of my voice, I am sure, will be absolutely pitch perfect. Hey, hope you have a good weekend coming up. Got a lot of little holes and what would you call them? We're trying to put Media Buzz together for Sunday morning, 11 Eastern on Fox, 8 Pacific. And as always is the case these days, we've got a lot of good stuff, but it's like a puzzle and you got to make the pieces fit. And that is what I will be doing after talking to you, which of course is my number one priority. Now, story number one, Donald Trump goes after RFK. Now, he's taken shots at Kennedy before. But this time, it's a video that shows you he's serious. Posted on Truth Social. Replayed a bit on television. I'll just read you some of it, and then we'll talk about it. Republicans, get it out of your mind that you're going to vote for this guy because he's conservative. He's not. For those of you who want to vote because you think he's an anti-vaxxer, he's not really an anti-vaxxer. That's only his political moment. So, RFK, his views on vaccines are fake, as is everything else about his candidacy. And then he goes on to say, you know, he's so radical left and his running mate, Nicole Shanahan, is even more radical left. And he says, I would even take Biden over Junior. That's his nickname for RFK, which since it's in his name, seems fair. He said, with Biden, at least there would be a year, or maybe he said a year or two, before the country collapses. With Junior, the country will collapse immediately. So clearly, obviously, indubitably, the Republican nominee for president, who is currently on criminal trial in New York, as we'll get to, is worried about RFK in some battleground states. You know, Kennedy is at 14% or 18%, you know, people know the name. And he's also, I think, going to take some votes from Joe Biden, but clearly, and must be based on some polling, you know, Donald Trump doesn't just make a 4-minute video attacking somebody unless he's got a reason to. I mean, sometimes he just goes off. It's also interesting that I guess in Republican circles, it's very bad to not be an anti-vaxxer. It's very good to be a vaxxer. Ironically, President Trump was the guy who, whatever his shortcomings, and there were many, in handling the pandemic of 2020, pushed through at miraculous speed, Operation Warp Speed, getting vaccines to the market, getting them through the bureaucracy that undoubtedly saved a lot of lives. I understand we look at it differently now, and some people think they can hurt you or the benefit of, you know, that's fine. We can debate that. But by the way, I mean, RFK is the ultimate anti-vaxxer and propagator of conspiracy theories. You can go through his whole record. Another thing that's happened with Kennedy is he used to say, I mean, this will not appeal to Republican voters. He used to say he was for a ban on abortion. Okay. Now, in a podcast or some interview the other day, he says he supports a woman's right to choose. And the question was, even at full term? And Bobby said, even at full term. So that's a complete and total flip. It makes you wonder what is really his position on abortion. Has he decided that he's got to have the most liberal position possible to win Democratic votes? But I'll tell you what really upsets me about this. This is a guy running for president, famous name. His father was assassinated. His uncle, President Kennedy, was assassinated, who has lied and withheld information about serious health problems. And just as I predicted, you know, it got a little coverage the first day, and now it's just like become a joke. Well, what's the matter with you? You must have a worm in your brain. Nobody really, with leaving aside, you know, the obvious jokes. And remember, it's not just that Bobby Kennedy, in a deposition revealed by the New York Times, said that he was told by a doctor that a worm had gotten into his brain, had eaten part of his brain, and then died. How can you be a serious candidate for president? How can the media not treat this more seriously when that information was withheld? It only came out in a divorce deposition where he was trying to pay his ex-wife less. And it's not just that. Mercury poisoning. Atrial fibrillation, 4 hospitalizations. All of this said to, in his account, affect both his short-term memory and his long-term memory. Now, maybe Trump didn't mention that. You'd think he might have had a worm joke in there or something, just given that it's Donald Trump. Maybe because he doesn't want to, you know, this would then come around and some reporter would ask, well, what about you? Why haven't you released your medical records? And Joe Biden hasn't released his medical records. But I really think the press only cares about RFK Jr. in terms of him being a spoiler. You know, he's not going to be in the White House. But if he gets, you know, it's a long campaign. But if he gets anything close to what he's getting in some of these swing states, he's going to hurt somebody. I mean, I think he'll draw from both candidates, but look, if Donald Trump is making videos, he's obviously concluded that he said something in the video about you can't just vote for him and then feel good. In other words, if you're moderate to conservative and you don't want Donald Trump for a whole variety of reasons, and you also think President Biden is too old or too infirm, or you don't like the direction he's taking the country, hey, Bobby Kennedy. You know, probably knowing full well it's a protest vote. But given the tight margins, and I keep seeing these polls, you know, Trump up by 2, Biden up by 2, Biden up by 1, Trump up by 3, Trump by 5, depending on the state we're talking about. We're talking here basically about Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, where Biden went this week. And those are the big 3. If Biden wins 2 of them, the election's probably over. If Biden wins all 3, the election's certainly over, but that may not happen. And then you get into states like Arizona, maybe even North Carolina, but given the number of electoral votes, that those three are, you know, the old Rust Belt that used to be automatically blue. That's gonna decide the election. So, I think the media, if Donald Trump is taking RFK more seriously, then the media need to take him more seriously, including on his health problems that he withheld. It's not that the problems themselves might be disqualifying, although it would be nice to have an up-to-date physical report, medical report. It's the deception, not wanting anybody to know about that.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles, with an auto warranty about to expire, or with no warranty coverage at all. With summer quickly approaching, CarShield is offering a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs, like AC parts and check engine light mysteries. See why CarShield is voted America's most trusted vehicle protection company, and see why our commitment to our customers has landed us an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. We have live reps here to answer all your questions. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Visit us for your free quick quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio. What do you have to lose? Visit carshield.com/audio.
All right, let's slide into story number two. I got a lot to say about yesterday's hush money trial. Just to catch you up, because most people have lives and can't sit there all day and read tiny type on the screen. It is just surreal. I mean, they are belatedly releasing transcripts, but why we can't get the audio? I mean, even the Supreme Court allows audio for big cases. And even if we get the audio after the day's proceedings, it would just be so different to be hearing the voices of Alvin Bragg's prosecutors, of Donald Trump's lawyers, and taking yesterday's example of Stormy Daniels. And so I see, you know, I follow all the words, and I look at the summaries that some of the newspapers are doing. And I place particular emphasis when somebody comes on one of the cable networks and says, I was in the room. You know, whether that person is pro-Trump, anti-Trump, pro-Stormy, whatever, I think you get a better sense from somebody who's there than somebody who is just commenting after, you know, reading on paper. So Trump tried again for a mistrial based on things that Stormy Daniels had testified to about their alleged one-night sexual encounter, which Trump flatly denies. And Judge Juan Merchan said, look, your lawyers, often doing this at a bench conference, your lawyers opened the door to Stormy Daniels giving her account of that night because you said in your opening statement that this didn't happen. There was no liaison. There was no sex. And jurors would have to choose. Do you believe Trump? Do you believe Stormy Daniels? She testified for 7 hours over 2 days. And I got to say, the first day, she certainly gave a highly detailed account that would make a lot of people think, yes, of course. She went there. She knows what the room looked like. She talked about their conversation. She talked about him originally wearing silk pajamas and all of that. The cross-examination the first day was pretty effective, even though some anti-Trumpers don't want to acknowledge that. Do you hate Trump? Yes. I don't hate anybody, but, you know, he's done a lot of damage to my life. Do you want to see Trump behind bars? Absolutely. And there was a lot about the money she had made and the lie that she had to acknowledge telling, that she signed an NDA. And therefore, when the Wall Street Journal published the story, I remember she basically is accused of being a lying gold digger who's exploiting what? Well, at least a brief meeting with Trump, because we have a picture of them together, and trying to make money. And she comes back and says, well, everybody likes to make a little money, but I'm telling the truth. Although she acknowledged obviously not telling the truth when she said rumors about me and Trump are completely untrue, because she had already gotten the $130,000, the accounting for which really is at the heart of this case. But yesterday's cross-examination was awful, conducted by Susan Nicholas. And it was like a prudish man from the 1950s who couldn't believe he had to talk to this woman from this terrible profession. Some people use the word slut-shaming. But to me, it was even more fundamental than that. Susan Nicholas got into such minutiae in an attempt that I thought was spectacularly unsuccessful to show that Stormy Daniels had changed her story. She would say, well, you told this to Vogue magazine, but you said this other thing, and then it had to do, you know, that she spent like minutes on whether Stormy Daniels got any food after being invited by Trump's bodyguard to have dinner with him. Who the hell cares whether she got any food? She said over and over and over again, there's dinner, and I never got dinner. This is 2006. Why waste time on that? Do you think the jury cares? The jury does not care. And while you always try to chip away at a witness who's talked about whatever the main topic is many times in different venues, it got down to, well, you said Trump invited you to the dinner. And she said, and Stormy would say, well, that was a much shorter interview, so I just used the shorthand. Obviously, it was the bodyguard, she says. And on and on and on. And periodically, as if she was about to unveil a great Perry Mason moment, she would say, you made all this up, right? And Daniels at one point said, no. What about, you just are making these phony stories about sex because you're in the adult film business. You've made 200 films, 150, said Stormy. She said, the sex in her films is very much real, just like what happened to me in that room. So, a number of observers, including some people in the room, say that while on paper it looked like, you know, Stormy was really getting zapped, that she actually became a sympathetic witness. You know, she was feisty, and she pushed back about the money and about the merchandise. And Stormy said, well, Trump sells a lot of stuff. At one time, she seemed to be on the verge of tears. She told one of the prosecutors that she had to hire security, move several times, take extra precautions because of her daughter. As telling the truth, the assistant DA said, been a net positive or net negative for you? Negative, she said. And then Nicholas just kept pounding away. You're motivated by greed. You took the money from Michael Cohen. Well, Stormy said it was because I was running out of time. This 2016 election was, you know, a couple of weeks away. very close. And the whole idea was for this not to come out while Donald Trump was trying to win the presidency for the first time. And when George Mershon dismissed the latest mistrial attempt, he said, look, given the way you've attacked her and given the fact that you deny there was any sex at all, that allows the people, meaning the Manhattan DA's office, to do what they can to rehabilitate her and to corroborate her story. What about saying Trump didn't use a condom? The judge said, I don't know why on earth the defense didn't object to that question. Trump had asked her about safe sex practices in the porn industry. But, according to Stormy's account, didn't follow that practice himself. And then they got into all the stuff that she was hawking. And it sounds pretty cheesy. In fact, the Trump lawyer called it chilling. And Stormy came right back. Not unlike Mr. Trump. Well, you got this book contract for $800,000. That story has made you a lot of money, right? It has also cost me a lot of money, Stormy Daniels said. And at one point, she was asked about, well, do you know what the indictment's about? And she says, no, I'm just here to answer questions that she didn't have. She's never pretended to have any firsthand knowledge about the bookkeeping or any alleged falsification of money to reimburse Michael Cohen for the $130K. And I don't have it in front of me, but the lawyer said something along the lines of, you know, but you're responsible for this case. And Stormy said, I got Donald Trump indicted. And Stormy said she believed an all caps tweet from Trump posted last year. If you go after me, I'm coming after you. So I think it was a spectacular miscalculation. Another Trump lawyer, Todd Blanche, said the way that Stormy phrased her account was a dog whistle for rape. And when asked about, you know, faking it on screen during X-rated filming, she said, I have experience in memorizing dialogue, not how to have sex. Pretty sure we all know how to do that. So there was humor at times. And I just think it was a lot of wasted time. If you can turn, you know, look, there's a lot of sort of natural prejudice against a sex worker, as they call it now. If you can turn her into a sympathetic figure, that's a pretty bad day at the office. Okay, here is the, you know, every time I turn on the TV, particularly now CNN and MSNBC showing endless pictures of Stormy. In a few cases, photos in which she's kind of falling out of her dress. Well, here's the New York Times fashion critic. She was in all black, a scoop neck jumpsuit with cropped black trousers, chunky high heel boots, and a long shawl like cardigan with a hood enveloping her now famous body. This is a review of Stormy's what she wore. Her blonde hair was caught up in the back with bits escaping to shield her face. Black framed glasses, little makeup. The next day, that would be yesterday. Plain green dress, wore her hair down, and a necklace her daughter had made. But on day one, she wore the same jumpsuit she wore in her cameo in the 2021 film Bad President. I confess to not seeing. Why does it matter? You know, the person who pioneered this is or was Robin Givhan, fashion critic for the Washington Post. And at the time, it was like, why are you reviewing? I mean, often it was women, but sometimes it was men. I remember Dick Cheney review what they're wearing. But now, you know, we just take it for granted that that's another thing. You know, you don't see a review of what Keith Davidson was wearing or David Pecker. And basically said, look, Stormy Daniels, porn actress, stripper, adult writer, director, comes with a host of deep-seated cultural and social associations. Therefore, we have to know what kind of image she was presenting. Okay, story number three. Marjorie Taylor Greene, as you know, especially if you listen to this podcast, you know, failed pretty miserably in her effort to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson. Washington Post says she was never hugely popular among her more centrist colleagues. Here's Republican Congressman Barry Loudermilk. People are calling me saying, please, tell her not to do this. Mike is a good man. He's doing the best he can. Trump's calling her and telling her not to. I think she lost a whole lot of respect in her district. The vast majority of House Republicans, exhausted with the constant chaos after the ouster just 6 months ago of Kevin McCarthy, are writing her off as a bothersome sideshow, says the Washington Post. She's going to win re-election in Georgia. That's not up for debate. Here is one lawmaker, name not attached. She's pissed off because she was friends with McCarthy, and she missed the first vacancy, so she called the second vacancy. Well, she was more than friends with Kevin McCarthy. She was a key ally. But even Trump, who MTG praises, and he has had only nice things to say about her. I absolutely love Marjorie Taylor Greene among them. But he disagreed with the motion to vacate, saying that Mike Johnson had done a good job. Politico says a growing number of GOP colleagues are pushing for bigger consequences for her and the, I guess it's 10 other Republicans who voted to oust the speaker. Specific punishments would be triggered if hardliners keep breaking ranks against leadership, such as the conference, the GOP conference, being able to vote on yanking their committee assignments or even ejecting them from the conference altogether. The same consequences may also be on the table for Republicans who vote to block Republican bills from even getting on the floor, a once rare show of discontent. Because, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene hasn't even ruled out doing this again. Do I think she's going to do this again if they're getting clobbered? No, I don't. I do think it's brought her a lot of attention. I think that is sort of the coin of the realm. I've interviewed her a couple of times. I've invited her twice in this last period to come on, but she's chosen just to sort of talk to the media mob and not do any individual interviews. Republican Congressman Tom Massey of Kentucky, who was her major ally in this effort, predicted that Republicans who opposed trying to boot Mike Johnson, which is to say almost all Republicans, were going to take an ass-whooping from their base. Well, we shall see.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Now, let's get to story number four. Doug Burgum. The name doesn't immediately ring a bell. He is a governor, the governor of North Dakota. He's suddenly gotten a lot of press about how Trump really likes him. And he could be the VP choice. I mean, I hate to get drawn into this, you know, 3 months of deep stake speculation. But it is kind of odd. I happen to be on a panel with him on a Fox show. He's pretty new to the spotlight. Question is why. Even his home state associates are surprised. And he comes from a state with three electoral votes that haven't gone to a Democrat since LBJ. So what does he bring to the ticket? Well, he's knowledgeable about energy, economics, foreign policy, according to this piece. He looks the part. Former Bush advisor Scott Jennings saying Trump is a casting director who looks more like a VP than Burgum. And he's a rich guy who could help with fundraising. So, also, there's no danger of him outshining Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's not going to pick somebody who's so controversial. They're going to be on the cover of Time magazine instead of him. Scott Jennings, who appears on CNN, also saying, well, as far as I know, he's not out here dying on Dog Murder Hill every day, referring to another governor, Kristi Noem, and her now infamous shooting of her dog. So, you know, Bergen spent some time at Mar-a-Lago. Sure, he'd like to get the nod, but so would a lot of other people. Story number five, and this really ticks me off. It ticks me off so much that I've been waiting and waiting for a chance to talk about it. New York Times piece about what's dubbed mid-TV. Mid as in, okay, pretty good, mediocre. So the critic goes through all of these various shows that are on streaming. You know, whether it's Netflix or Apple or Peacock or Prime Video, you name it, or Max. The Americans. Carrie Russell was in that. Now she's in The Diplomat, a forgettably fun dramedy. Natasha Lyon, or Lyon, of Orange is the New Black and Russian Doll, is now in Poker Face, The Wire. He rattles off some more. I've watched all of these shows, he says. They're not bad. They're simply mid, which is what makes them frustratingly emblematic of the current moment in TV. What we have now is a profusion of well-cast, sleekly produced competence. We have tasteful remakes of familiar titles. We have evidence of healthy budgets spent on impressive locations. We have good enough new shows that resemble great old ones. This is not an essay about how bad TV is today, just the opposite. There's little bad high-profile television it made anymore. These days, it takes a special confluence of celebrity pull and network resources to make a dud. What we have today instead is something less awful, but in a way more sad. The willingness to retreat, to settle, to trade the ambitious for the dependable. Okay, I can't take it anymore. This is so snobby because I watch a lot of these streaming shows. Some of them are just okay, sure, but most of them are pretty good. And remember, you pay for this, and people wouldn't pay if they didn't think they were getting a good product. And compared to the garbage that, you know, I watched as a kid when you basically had, you know, three networks and maybe a local one or two, you know, My Mother the Car and Green Acres. I like Beverly Hillbillies. That was a good show. You know, because, you know, if you were a kid and you watched a lot of TV, that's what there was. The stuff that we have in streaming today is so much better, better acted, better directed. The amount of money sent on sets, I mean, even though they're going through a shakeout and maybe spending much less money now. But, says the New York Times guy, the rise of cable transformed both the business and the art of television as the likes of HBO, FX, and AMC took risks and offered creators freedom. You know, so then came The Sopranos, Mad Men, Girls. For a good two decades now, TV is so highly acclaimed now that for so long we were like the frog in boiling water. Oh, this goes on and on. Netflix's early hit House of Cards was a harbinger, a pot of boiling ham given the aura of prestige with the casting of a pre-scandal Kevin Spacey. House of Cards, leaving aside Kevin Spacey's personal conduct, it was a fabulous, riveting drama. And so was Succession. Fabulous acting. Brian Cox, the patriarch, and how his kids, also fabulous actors who've won awards, fought with each other, lied to each other, lied to their dad. Doesn't sound very appealing, but it was great. So, you know, he ends up comparing it to fast casual dining. You know, a gourmet cheeseburger, according to a Netflix executive. And the guy says, yeah, I kind of like gourmet cheeseburgers, but, you know, it's like going to McDonald's and getting a Big Mac. I just, like, you can criticize any particular show. I'm not going to rattle off all the ones that I think are good. You may disagree. But the quality is so much higher than it was when you just had the broadcast networks that... And this guy's like, oh, we need people to take risks, and they're being creatively stifled. Well, I don't agree. This is the golden age, as far as I'm concerned. May not be as good in a year or two. Maybe getting too expensive for people to pay all these different services. But as you can tell, I'm a little exercised about this. But time to wrap up. Hope you have a good weekend. Media Buzz Sunday morning, 11 Eastern. And with that, no tapping. See you back here on Monday with more Buzz Meter. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.